Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to The Rose Colombo, right here for you every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because today is a beautiful day here on the West Coast. Hope that it's a beautiful day for you as well. Today, we're going to have a very dynamic guest returning to our show on Colombo Chronicles Live, worldwide online podcast, and her name is Sarita Stevens. That's spelled S like Sam, E-R-I-T-A, and Stevens, S-T-E-V, like Victor, E-N-S. Sarita Stevens, she has 40 books to her credit. And among them are the Ultimate Writer's Workbook for Books and Scripts. If you are a writer, you'll want to listen in. Also, The Forensic Nurse, The Book of Poisons, and Bagels for Tea. Interesting title, isn't it? I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Sarita Stevens in just a few minutes. But first, I wanted to ask you a question. You know, most Americans think about people dying from cancer, diseases, such as the latest known virus, coronavirus, and we pray that that one is brought under control and prevented in the future. And we pray for all of those who are suffering from the coronavirus and who are stuck on ships because of the coronavirus. Hopefully they will be released soon. But we have to be careful so that it doesn't spread. And of course we pray for all the citizens of China. But we also hear that people die in a plane, a train, a boat, a car accident, or other types of accidents such as falling or fires, earthquakes, storms, and so forth. All very sad and tragic. But in America, we don't really think about people being poisoned. We don't really talk about it because it really isn't on our minds. We believe it happens in the movies, in Europe, in third world nations such as Russia, the Ukraine, China, North Korea, and so forth. But in America, on February 8, 2020, a woman died of carbon monoxide poisoning from her vehicle she left running. In Idaho, 25 people were hospitalized for carbon monoxide poisoning while on vacation. And in Florida, an elderly couple were found dead after they left their car running in the garage. So be careful about leaving your car running in the garage, especially if you have an open door to your garage into your home. And you forget about it's running because you're busy putting away your groceries or answering the phone and so forth. And even at Fort Bragg military base, families were hospitalized with carbon monoxide poisoning problems in their homes. We don't hear about these things very much. A former Texas pastor, Matt Baker, was indicted for his wife's death after she was found dead from an overdose of sleeping pills. The Black Widow, Stacey Castor, had a shocking timeline of husbands and crimes, and her victims apparently were poisoned with antifreeze, which they didn't find out for years. In the Kremlin, at least 10 people have died of poisoning not so long ago who opposed their government and government leaders. So, of course, none of it's been proven, but there you are. And there's many, many, many more if you do your homework and your research. And so it's very exciting to have our dynamic guest, Sarita Stevens, with us today. And she is a registered nurse and a dynamic author of 40 books. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about her as soon as we come back from this important message. So don't touch that dial because we're about to enter into the world of authors and experts.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. If you just joined us, we are about to enter into the world of authors and experts with our dynamic author, Sarita Stevens. And she's written 40 books. And among them are The Forensic Nurse, The Book of Poisons, Bagels for Tea. She's a registered nurse, and she's taught at USC after being reared in Chicago. She worked as an investigative reporter at CBS in Chicago and helped expose a hospital in the Windy City that pretended to heal cancer patients. She will fill in on her latest literary works. She has strong opinions on what makes a bestseller, notably in the fields of mystery and suspense, and she'll share her credits with us in the world of film. She has assisted many attorneys as an expert witness. She really likes to help people. And so this is a win-win situation for her and for everyone involved with her. So let's just say hello to Sarita Stevens and let's get started with our information on the forensic nurse. Very, very intriguing. Hi, Sarita. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rose. Good to talk to you again.
Always good to talk to you, Sarita. You have such an interesting career.
That's what people say.
It's very intriguing.
Most people don't really realize that forensic nursing exists or what we do.
Actually, I did not until I spoke with you and heard about your book, The Forensic Nurse. So hopefully what?
we have two shows in pre-production, one a reality show and the other a scripted show all about forensic nursing. And hopefully they will go forward and succeed.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations. I hope they succeed as well. I'm sure they will. It's an intriguing topic. No, I never heard of a forensic nurse until I met you, and it's very intriguing to me because, as you know, I'm an advocate for justice for many years. So why don't you tell us, what is a forensic nurse, and how did you get involved?
Well, the word forensic means legal, and most people don't realize it because they associate it with that, like Quincy and stuff like that. But the fact is, anything that's legal And medical, it can be a forensic, like a forensic veterinarian can look at animal hairs from a crime scene or something like that. Forensic dentist can look at bite marks and tell you if it's human or animal or something like that. And a forensic nurse, we do a lot of different things, helping police and attorneys and helping law enforcement in general. I actually started a long time ago. There was a series called Cherry Dreams, where it was a nurse detective, sort of like Nancy Drew, and she was solving crimes in the hospital. That's what I wanted to be. But of course, when I got to nursing school, I found nursing was a lot different at that time. And then I stumbled on somebody that had a handle, Sleuth RN, and I found out about forensic nursing. And the majority of us work with sexual assault victims, Harvey Weinstein. But we also do domestic violence, elder abuse, child abuse, arson investigation, motor vehicle investigation, death investigation, as well as I do a lot of legal nurse investigation, where I help attorneys look through cases and determine whether or not they really have a case there, or whether or not something needs to be pursued along one line or another line. And it's really very fascinating. The majority of doctors and majority of nurses do not know how to collect evidence properly, how to save it properly, and don't know how to testify. We are not given, as nurses, we are not given the proper due that we should be having in the courts as well. They look to doctors because they think doctors are experts, but those doctors don't know how to talk to the jury. We as nurses are the liaison between the public and the doctors, and we interpret things, and so we are better experts and better for testimony than the doctors, actually. So basically, a forensic nurse does all that.
Well, that is a lot. That's quite expensive. And so can you, hone in on just a specific industry, or, insurance perhaps, and car accidents, or is it everything and anything included?
Anything to do with the legal system that combines legal system and medicine, it would be forensic. So a forensic nurse can fit in there. So somebody comes into an ER with a cut or with a wound of some sort, and you have to determine, first of all, you have to code it properly and say this is a cut or a laceration. And by saying a cut, it means it was cut with a scissors or something sharp. If it's a laceration, somebody was hit with a baseball bat or have abrasions and stuff like that. So just by the nurses writing that description can change the whole case as far as the attorney goes. But we can look at almost anything. We can tell what side, if somebody was wearing a seatbelt when the car crashed or not. We can look at a death investigation case and say, well, this is a natural case because he had this and this medication in his home and this other medical problems beforehand. We help explain things to the police that they don't see. And so any case can become a forensic nursing case.
So would it be fair to say that between the difference between you, the forensic nurses, and the doctors is that they are looking to see the problem and to fix the problem, whereas you are looking like a nurse sleuth to find out what caused the problem?
Well, yes. I mean, we also want to take care of the patient as well. I mean, the patient is always our number one concern. But if, for instance, a patient comes in with a bullet wound, and the doctor might in the shirt, and the doctor might cut through the shirt into the bullet wound without even considering that that's evidence. If they cut around it, they could see the stippling and other things, which would indicate how far away the shooter was and stuff like that. But if they're only concerned with the one focus of taking care of the patient and not the whole picture, they're going to ruin evidence. So
yes, that's what I was thinking.
And we are trained to be suspicious of everything around us, and ask questions about everything. And, you know, and doctors, of course, want to heal patients, and that's wonderful, but they have to also consider how is this going to affect the court case, and they don't consider that at all.
So are the forensic nurses allowed to question the patients?
Oh, yeah. We do interviews of the patients. We are trained in interview techniques.
Okay. And so this could probably involve anything like child abuse, domestic violence, any type of problem, right?
Any type of problem. A lot of us go out, human trafficking. You know, somebody comes in with a lot of different wounds that can't be explained, and a history of wounds at different hospital visits, and you start to question things, and you help get them out of it and direct them to safety.
Right.
So,
and so do you have special equipment that you use for certain cases?
Oh, well, yeah, the colposcope is used for examining in depth for sexual assault. We use different things for different types of cases, obviously. But mostly we just use our brains. and other technology, whatever technology we have available to us. You know, you just have to understand the mechanics of things. You know,
right.
How did this injury happen, you know? For instance,
so
a blood force trauma. Yeah.
Do you take
one
photographs
case I've had, photographs.
Okay.
You have to take photographs with measurements and a distance and far away. But like one case I had, they tried to say that the black eye was due to the person hitting the head against the wall, when in fact you get a black eye from blunt force trauma directly to the eye orbit. And I showed that to the jury, and they immediately knew that the techs were lying when they said that the patient had gotten the black eye from hitting her head against the wall.
I see.
You know.
And so is it more difficult, because I personally would think it was more difficult, to interview the patients who are involved with domestic violence or a child because of the relationship to the perpetrators?
You do have to be careful with what you're saying. You have to isolate the patients and the victims and try to get different stories. But the police all know this as well. But sometimes they're willing to talk to the nurse because she doesn't look as threatening, authoritarian as the police do. So that sometimes they'll talk to us where they won't talk to the police.
Yeah,
and,
I can understand that.
And we try to relate to them on a different level. And so, as I said, sometimes we are very helpful to the police in getting the truth out.
So how do you deal with, just curious, as a nurse and a forensic expert here, how do you deal with some of the horrific scenes you see, you know, when people come into the ER or at an accident or whatever, without becoming over emotional when you see?
It's very difficult. You just have to learn to you build up a not really a tolerance. That's not the right word. We build up sort of a shield that helps us to deal with it, and then we have to go home and decompress, there's a lot of burnout because of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering, because that is a lot of negativity you're seeing and a lot of emotional feelings that you're feeling when you see somebody injured and hurt. And so, yeah, I was wondering, you know, how do doctors and nurses deal with all that on a daily basis?
Police deal with the same sort of thing. You know, I don't know, how can people treat people so badly? You know, you have the same sort of thing when you're, you know, basically a good person and you see all this negativity around you. You have to learn how to compartmentalize it.
So you really have to be, you have to be a certain type of personality to actually become a forensic nurse, because this is a lot of training and a lot of education and a lot of dealing with different different people in different careers. I mean, law enforcement, judges, juries, witnesses, patients, staff, medical staff. So that's huge. That's expensive.
It is a lot of training, yes. You have to be a nurse first, and then you go on to take extra courses in forensics and victimology and blood spatter analysis and wound identification and things like that, burn analysis, how to read charts, how to correct chart. I know what should be in a chart, what doesn't go in a chart, different things like that. It's an understanding, and there's different aspects that you specialize in. We also go into prisons and determine if somebody is really sane or insane according to the law and according to how they are. There's different aspects of different definitions for legal terms of insanity versus medical terms of insanity.
Right, and so like asexual. A victim of sexual abuse, you probably have to be very sensitive to that person, because I knew someone who was actually attacked, and I went to the home, and the police were already there because I was called, and she was shaking. She was afraid to even, for me to even talk to her. She was afraid of everything and everybody.
Of course, yes. And you do have to, you know, approach them very carefully, give them a chance to talk when they're ready to talk, and let them know that you're there for them when they're ready to talk. But one thing victims need to know is that not to change their clothing to go directly to the hospital, because there is usually evidence on their clothing and on their bodies themselves, you know, that they can wash away if they, you know, the first thing you want to do is go take a shower and cleanse yourself of what happened. But you're washing away evidence if you do that.
Right. So it's a very, very difficult situation and very sensitive situation. And why do you think, as a nurse and a forensic nurse, that so many, I'm sorry, but I, from being a longtime advocate for justice, I've seen so many insensitive lawyers and judges when it comes to victims of child abuse and adult females.
Yeah, a lot of them, I think, are because they're males and they don't experience it. And they don't see it. I mean, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, I guess you could say, you know.
Because it is a violent crime. I mean, it's a violent crime, and it causes lifetime emotional problems. Whether people eventually go on and live their lives, but it's still there until the day they die. So it affects the rest of their lives, and yet it's pathetic that so many male judges and lawyers don't see it as a violent crime, and they give them a slap on the wrist and let the suspects go.
It's
they repeat the same old thing.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think that's a really, you know, important topic for forensic nurses maybe to think about, you know, and maybe they could help do something about that. But yeah,
we're working on it. Not easy. We're working on it.
Oh, no, because I had an organization in the 90s and the early 2000s, and we would address it, but it was like talking to a wall. So you also wrote a book of poisons. Why did you write a book of poisons, and what is that about?
Well, as a mystery writer, people were always, in my mystery writing group, people were always asking me, what does this mean? What does that mean? What's an aneurysm? How does this work? And I realized that there was nothing there in plain English for writers to understand. And so being a nurse, I understand medicalese. So I started doing research and wrote the Book of Poisons is in plain English for writers to get their poisons correct. so that they would know what the symptoms are, what the antidotes were, how strong a toxic was, something was, and where they were found and things like that. I didn't write exact toxicity of certain things because obviously I didn't want it used in real life. But it has been shown on SVU, on different medical examiner desks and stuff like that, and different shows. I've been on Discovery and on other shows, helping them to explain things and helping them with medical questions.
And so, people who are writers and like to write mystery stories, can they use this particular book, Book of Poisons, to help them write their stories?
Yes, that is exactly what it's for. A lot of writers have used it.
Perfect. And so, do you prefer to write about facts and truth, or do you prefer to write about fiction?
Well, I actually prefer fiction because you can have justice at the end. In fact, I used to write a lot of romance novels until I realized that many of the romance heroes were actually abusers. If you will do this or else. And so I started writing mysteries more because you had justice at the end for the heroes and heroines. And unfortunately, we don't always have justice in the real world. But I do like creating my own stories. My most recent book is Logan's Land. It's a Western romantic suspense from a female viewpoint. And then I have another one about against her will, about a girl in a psychiatric hospital who has to realize that nothing is really against her will. And then she turns to the Lord in the end. And I have other things. I have a grandmother mystery series from St. Martin's Press. I have all sorts of different things that I like enjoying. I like educating while I'm entertaining. When I'm writing nonfiction, even I like to use story to get people involved and get them to understand and say, "Oh, that sounds familiar. I can do that. I understand that." And the people relate to things better when you're writing story rather than when you're just presenting them with facts.
True.
Many documentaries fail because they're boring, because they're just presenting facts. They're not relating it to stories that people can look and visualize and experience and feel the emotion there.
And yes, I agree with that.
I keep writing too, and I keep writing students if they have to look at the emotion and the characters and not just the plot. Because what the characters do is creates the plot, not the other way around.
Oh, and so do you teach writing one-on-one or online? How do you do that?
Well, I used to teach at various colleges and universities. Now I do a lot of one-on-one. I speak at a lot of conferences and things like that. I help people on a mentorship basis often, read their material, edit it, give them suggestions, things like that.
Oh, that's fantastic. So would that be on a website you have, perhaps, where they could contact you if they were seeking your assistance?
Yeah, my website is saritastevens.com, and my information is on there for them to contact me.
That's fantastic. And so would you say that if someone is a nurse or seeking to be a nurse, that it would be good if they're interested in helping law enforcement and helping victims to become and learn more about being a forensic nurse?
Absolutely. Well, I think all nurses need to be educated about it because, as I said, the majority of nurses in the ER don't know how to take evidence, how to isolate it and keep it from being contaminated. For instance, we use paper bags, not plastic for the most part, because plastic will deteriorate the evidence and they don't know how to keep it separated. There's a lot of things that nurses need to, they're starting to do it in the nursing programs to give them some forensic education and how to talk to a jury and things like that. But most nurses still don't know about that, and most doctors don't either. So, yes. I would highly recommend nurses to educate themselves about this.
Yeah, I think that could be a whole new career that could open up because when you watch movies, you never see a forensic nurse testifying. You only see the doctors or psychiatrists.
Right.
And so I think that it's exactly what you said, that they can relate to the people more than a doctor who's a bookworm, and most of them, and which is good. And that's where their concentration is in explaining it as a medical terminology versus a more human terminology, which I think a forensic nurse could add to the testimony and help solve the case.
Absolutely. Well, we're still fighting, the old boys system, when nurses are sisters and IVs and stuff like that. And a lot of, especially in smaller towns and stuff like that, where actually coroners are elected and can be handyman, can be cemetery keepers, can be funeral home operators, and they have known nothing about the medical, really, how to take care of the body, how to determine cause of death and things like that. And a lot of nurses have become local coroners and things, but the fact is that we're still fighting with the police and with the old guys, and the old doctors, and a lot of the doctors resent us for taking over their patients, and a lot of the hospital administrators don't want to pay us the overtime. It takes maybe 4 hours to do a really good sexual assault exam, and they don't want to pay us the overtime. So it becomes difficult.
Yes, I'm glad you pointed that out because we don't really think about in other states that, there's these rural towns everywhere and that one person is doing a lot of different jobs.
Absolutely.
And they're the jack of all trades, you go to him for a Band-Aid, you go to him for to have your tooth pulled, whatever, We don't really think that way, if we're living in the city, right?
Exactly. And small towns need to have more resources.
Isn't that interesting? And I think that even, like the internet, it probably isn't effective in a lot of different rural towns as well. So, they're not jumping on the internet to find out information. And it's very hard to change people. It's very hard to change people's minds and lifestyle.
Grown up idea. Exactly. This is the goal and stuff like that.
Yeah, any type of change is new, and people don't like to change. And so they're comfortable where they're at, and so they don't want to make that change. So they'll fight against it. But change comes eventually if people don't give up, right?
It takes a while. We have a lot of people supporting us. We're slowly gaining ground.
I think it's fantastic. I'm very happy that you have done this and that you're working hard at making it happen because I think it's very important. And I've been in many, many courtrooms, and there's a lot of loose ends in the testimony, in the courtrooms. And I think the more information that can be provided to a jury or to a judge is very, very helpful to a case.
Yeah. Well, in many cases, look at the emotional aspect either of a rape or they think a lot of men think if there's no physical injury on the victim, then obviously it didn't happen. It wasn't a real rape. And they don't realize the emotional aspect, and people react differently. Sometimes, they're so scared that they just lay there and there's no physical injury to them, but there's a lot of emotional injury to them.
Oh, there's a lot of emotional. Some women die. Some women become sterile. Some women become same sex because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Some women never marry. I mean, I know someone who will never marry because of that situation. And it's the same for the incest, the children of incest. And it is a violent crime, and I don't care what anyone says, it is a violent crime. It is just invading all your privacy, everything, you know, humiliating. It's just, you're just, you're nothing when somebody's just doing whatever they want with you. And so I truly support making it tougher on pedophiles who are guilty
and
of rape and gang rape. And you know, I just find it very, very disturbing to see children and females suffering from people who think they can just kidnap a child that doesn't belong to them and do whatever they want to do.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm very happy that you're doing this work and that you're educating people about it, and that I'm hoping that it will continue to expand and grow and help victims of rape and incest and gang rapes. And Sarita Stevens, it is always a pleasure to have you on Colombo Chronicles Live. And unfortunately, we've come to the end of our interview, but now's your time to shine. And Sarita Stevens, you can give our audience any information you want, any message, any contact information, and, of course, the names of your books and how to buy them.
Well, one of my books, The Ultimate Writer's Workbook for Books and Scripts, talks about the difference between writing books and writing scripts, and gives people idea to if they want to write something. My newest, my Western romantic suspense that I just, from the female viewpoint, Logan's Land, just came out. Against Her Will is about a teenager in a psych hospital who has to learn to deal with things and learn to turn to herself and the Lord. I have other books, Red Sea, Dead Sea. I have a grandmother mystery series. I have a I have dramedies. I have rom-coms. I write whatever my agent gets me, basically, but I try to make everything character-driven. And people can look me up at SaritaStevens.com. My IMBD is Sarita D. Stevens, and my email, if people want to reach me, is SaritaDStevens@gmail.com.
That's fantastic.
And I look forward to
hearing from people. That's fantastic, Sarita. And I hope everyone checks out your website and purchases your books, because they're totally fascinating and intriguing and filled with information and entertainment as well. So thank you so much, and you have a great day, and we'll talk to you again in the future.
Thank you, Rose.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Sarita Stevens has left the building, and be sure to check out her books, because you have a vast variety of topics and information, Forensic Nurse, The Book of Poisons, Bagels for Tea, on and on and on. And it is amazing that she is a nurse and a forensic nurse as well, and that she not only has written 40 books, but she is also teaching and also expanding the world of forensic nurses, which could be a huge career for many, many people in the future. That could be a whole new job opening, expanding in America, and that's what we're all about. We are all about finding ways to improve our justice system, to improve our way of life, and to improve our standard of living by creating more jobs that are of value. And a forensic nurse is needed and of value. So on that note, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts. So we're leaving authors and experts, and we're going to enter into the world of politics. So don't touch that dial.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose. Listen up, because I'm going to tell you about an article I find very disturbing, and you should find very disturbing. It's Northwest Public Broadcasting published it, and it says 2.5 million pounds of radioactive waste illegally dumped in Oregon landfill near Columbia River. This is very, very serious. Goodnight Midstream provides brine water supply and recycling services to the oil and gas industry for fracking operations. The liquid that Chemical Waste Management had received had been in contact with rocks underground that contained radium, said ODOE's nuclear waste remediation specialist Jeff Bright. Quote, then they filtered that water so that they can reuse it. Look how dangerous this is to our health. What is going on in this country? Then they filtered that water so that they can reuse it. That radium was captured in what are known as filter socks, which are very long tea bags, if you will, and it accumulated there, and what we've gathered is about 80% of the total waste consisted of these filter rocks, Burright said. We were just talking about poisons with our guest, Sarita Stevens, who wrote Forensic Nurse, and she's written 40 books, and one of them was Book of Poisons. And we were just talking about poisons. And how else would you get poisoned? Well, here's another way you can get poisoned, through drinking water. Oregon has a threshold of five picocuries, I imagine that's how you pronounce them, per gram of radium-226. Picocuries are a measurement of the radioactivity in a liter of air. The waste that was received at Chemical Waste Management Arlington had a range of concentrations over the time running from just a few picocuries per gram up to the maximum in about 1.5 tons total, which was around 1,700 picocuries per gram, Burright said. Initially, Chemical Waste Management had no records of a relationship with Goodnight Midstream. But it was later confirmed that the North Dakota company contracted a third-party oilfield waste logistics to dispose of its solid waste. Shipping manifests showed that OWL, was sending Goodnight Midstream's waste to Arlington. This reminds me back in... 3 decades ago, that continued on into the early 2000s, when the oil companies talked the California governor and the EPA into dumping MTBE, a toxic poisonous waste, into the gasoline. And so when you went to the pumps, you were breathing in the toxic waste, the toxic poisons into your body, and it was also airborne, where it would get into your cells, your open cells, your skin, your nails, your hair, your nose, your ears, your mouth. But we didn't see it. We were just breathing it. So how many people died from those years of breathing in MTBE? We don't know. How many people contacted cancer? We don't know. And so it leaked into the water, the drinking water, and it leaked into the soil. And I did a show on my former cable TV show that hit the TV guide back then in Southern California with Senator, Montjoy, Senator Montjoy. And he said that they were passing legislation to prohibit the MTBE from being dumped into the gasoline where we were breathing it into our bodies and also from leaking into the water and the soil, but it had already done so. In fact, it leaked into the, after the 2000s, into the drinking water in Orange County, California. Now, they say they could clean it up, but Senator Montjoy said it was at too high of a level to clean up at 11%. So how many people contacted cancer or other diseases from the contaminated drinking water? And what it was doing, it was saving the oil companies millions of dollars from having to dump it at landfills. And the EPA and the governor and the legislators of California and other states allowed them to do that, despite the health problems. Then in Northern California, there was a lawsuit because so many people were dying from cancer. And there was a huge class action lawsuit brought forward, and some people had already died, and the family members went forward as well and filed that lawsuit, and it, eventually they had to compensate the victims and their families. But how does it compensate if you have cancer or if you died from cancer? So this is very, very serious, and this is why this particular article caught my attention. It says that L, O-W-L, like the bird, everybody says I pronounce that wrong, basically misrepresented the fact that this waste could come into Oregon. So this begs the question or raises the question, were there bribes paid? Being the question, because generally somebody's making money. In the manifest that they provided to Chemical Waste Management Arlington, it basically said this waste does fit within Oregon's regulations, Niall said. The other part of the problem is that Chemical Waste Management did not do their due diligence to ensure what they were being told by L, O-W-L, was in fact accurate. So we have so much negligence and incompetence going on in this country, it's hard to believe there could be this much negligence and incompetence going on in this country. Where's the oversight? Anyway, the article goes on to say, ODOE's notice of violation has directed Chemical Waste Management to prepare a risk assessment to develop a coercive action plan to prevent recurrence. Well, what if the damage is already done? This will also help determine the best and safest course of action for the waste that is already buried in the landfill near the Columbia River. ODOE hasn't issued any fines associated with the illegal dumping of radioactive waste. Let me repeat that for you. ODOE has not issued any, zero, fines associated with the illegal dumping of radioactive waste. That's why I asked who's getting the bribes, if any. Just asking a question. Officials said it doesn't meet the criteria that would qualify for a fine. Alrighty. ODOE expects the risk assessment action plan to be submitted by the end of April. This is the first time we've had an incident like this that we have become aware that radioactive material has been brought into the state and illegally disposed in violation of our rules, Niles said. Very, very serious. Here we have Fukushima still dumping into the ocean. Did you know that? It's still dumping into the ocean. We're breathing in all of that. People are swimming in it. The fish are dying. The plant life is dying. Nobody's talking about it, but it is. It is dying. We are killing our environment with all these chemicals being dumped into the rivers, the oceans, the streams, the soil, sprayed into our environment. Who the heck knows what they're really spraying into our environment? Sprayed poisons into our environment when they said the giant bees were coming, the African bees and other bugs were coming to the USA and we needed to spray. And they sprayed an hour early and they sprayed on people. They sprayed an hour early, and I know people who got sprayed on. One was a family member, one was a best friend. They went to the store early so that they could make sure they got their cars in the garage and got in their homes. And when they got out of their cars, they were sprayed because they sprayed an hour early. Poison that could take the paint right off your car. So imagine what it does to your body. Dan Suris from the Columbia Riverkeeper said the news of the illegal dumping of fracking waste is a serious violation of the public trust and it's a huge risk for Oregon citizens. It seems unacceptable that Oregon can be used as a radioactive fracking waste dump for 3 years, Suris said. Oregon is trying to move in the direction of clean energy. Good luck. And what this tells us is it is urgently important to stop using fracked gas and fracked oil as quickly as possible because of these health risks that come with fracking to workers, communities, where this toxic material is being dumped, Sura said. So if you think that fracking is good, good luck. I never thought it was. I read about it, and it actually pushes the toxins back into the water, not out of the soil and the water. And here's a perfect example. It's not good for your health. It's not good for the workers' health. So what about the 5G? Do we really need faster phones, faster computers? Why? We didn't even have any. What, 15 years ago, in every room in our house, in our cars, on our planes, but we were healthier. So do we really need 5G? Why? Because it's going to be hooked up to your, possibly your houses, your businesses. It's going to be everywhere. It's a microwave. And do your homework and do your research. Waste Management, Inc. officials said in a written statement that they are cooperating with state regulators and are committed to improving the procedures they use to ensure they're complying with Oregon law. They already violated it, so really and truly. They said they now send waste samples to an independent technical expert for analysis prior to accepting it. Well, I think you should really Google this story, read it, do more research, especially if you live in Oregon, and call your representatives and express your opinion on this matter, because this landfill near the Columbia River is going to affect your life and your family's lives and your communities. It's time for Americans to stand up, speak out. Everything can't be about money. There has to be some boundaries. There have to be safe laws in place, because there'll be more people dying from cancer, Alzheimer's, dementia, and other diseases in this country and around the world. So that is a very serious issue, and I hope that you will call your representatives if you live in Oregon. What else is happening in America? Well, Attorney General Barr has told those close to Trump he is considering quitting over the president's tweets about Justice Department investigations. Well, I don't think that's a reason to quit. I think he's doing a good job. I think he should continue on doing a good job. He doesn't have to read the tweets. And then there's audio of Bloomberg's racist gun control comments that turned up on the live web. You may want to check that out. And the court caves to CARE again, the Muslim Brotherhood CARE. I want to tell you that any judge who caves in to the Muslim Brotherhood CARE Sharia law, in my opinion, is in violation of their sworn oath to uphold the United States Constitution and to perform their job duty to the American people who are legally in this country, were born in this country, innate to this country, who own this land, and who pay their wages, to uphold the United States Constitution. And if there are any judges in the U.S. in your districts who uphold Sharia law, you need to recall them. You need to become activists. You need to take action, or you will not have a country. We will not have a country. We will be like the UK, Germany, Belgium, Sweden, France, Italy. I was in Italy in those countries in 2018. I saw the change. You don't want that change in America. Go to Minneapolis and see the change. Go to Canada and you'll see the change. If you no longer want the United States of America, one nation under God, to exist under the republic operated by the United States Constitution that grants Americans freedom, liberty, rights, sovereignty, and thought, then you better join with your community of legal, loyal, patriotic Americans, become activists, and know what's going on in your city, county, state, and in your Department of Justice, including your judges, especially the judges. Because under their law, they believe that the men have a right to pedophilia, to gang rape, and to rape. And that is a felony in the United States of America. And it should remain a felony if found guilty, based on due process of law and a trial. And the one thing that makes America exceptional among the entire world of nations is that America constitutional laws include sovereignty, legal migration, legal citizenship, legal inspections, and require foreigners to assimilate as Americans and also uphold the Constitution of the United States, or they are not Americans, naturalized Americans. We are a nation of natural-born Americans who allow foreigners to enter our country legally and apply for naturalized citizenship. But they can be deported for violating our laws and for trying to overturn our government and replace our Constitution with their laws. Natural-born Americans can never be deported. And so it's up to you to recall judges who refuse to uphold the United States Constitution, because that is traitors and treason. And on that note, I have to say goodbye until next Wednesday, God willing, from 12 to 1 p.m. right here for you on Colombo Chronicles Live. God bless you. God bless America. God bless all our legislators on both sides of the aisle. May they all come to the same conclusion that we need to protect the greatest nation on earth, the greatest republic, the greatest laws ever created and written and approved, the United States Constitution.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.